In June 2011, 54 American and international visitandines came together in St. Louis, Missouri, to celebrate the 400th anniversary of the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary. For more information about the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary, go to visitationspirit.org. The following talk is The Museum in Mulan, by a Visitation Sister from Walden, Great Britain.
It's a joy to be here amongst so many old friends as well as new friends, and just to have this chance to share together on, as Sister says, all things of the Institute, which is always so dear to each one of us. Yes, I think I'm the fourth person that eventually to do this. Three were asked. So here I am. Again, pretty short notice, but I have been with the museum and visited the museum several times since its early days, and have taken a great interest in what Monsieur Picot was trying to achieve and is achieving, and indeed has achieved extremely well. It's 20 years old this year.
Wow.
And the museum was never designed to be a museum. It was never set up with an idea. Nobody came along with a project and said, hey, let's have a museum for the visitation. It was like so many good things. It evolved. And it evolved by the fact that the Monastery of Moulins was about to close, and I think it had been designed to close. And the superior, the last superior, Françoise Bernadette Lara, who was actually professor of Orléans, begged Monsieur Picot to keep the presence of the visitation alive in Moulins. And this was her dearest wish. And so he, who is a native of Moulins, who his family dates back to 1535 in Moulins, he was a little boy, an altar boy and server at the Monastery of Moulins, and has had great attachments, promised her that he would keep the memory of the visitation alive in Moulins, where our Holy Mother died. And so this was really founded on a promise, which is rather nice. He belonged to the Musée Bourbon, the Museum Bourbonnais, which is a sort of a more regional thing, and he worked for the emulation of the Bourbonnais. He's pretty patriotic and nationalistic, and he, when he was asked, he borrowed a little place from them to rent as the Museum of the Visitation. And this is the old 17th century place that he was given, and began to work with just a few rooms, a very, very modest beginning. I think there was only 12 monasteries in the beginning who contributed, who loaned their one or two precious things they had that they thought might be of interest. So he only had about 600 objects in 1991 when he began. But this was there was a rapid expansion and tremendous interest taken in this. And of course, he is those of us who know him. He's absolutely driven, just driven, there's no other word for it, by the love of the visitation and to have this place up and running. So in 2000, there were opened some more rooms for more precious objects, because he, obviously, monasteries were saying, well, look, we've got this in our sacristy or in our archives and we don't use it, and it really would be better with you because you preserve it so well, and therefore they gave. And there's a very formal and legitimate way of loaning. There's lots of forms to fill in, and has to be countersigned, and it's all very, very official. So that at a moment's notice, if you want back your precious treasure, it's back to you. So there's no question of giving it to the museum or giving it to the to Moulins region. In 2005, 1905, it became independent of the Museum Bourbonnais. And with a approbation of the Holy See from the Pontifical Commission for Cultural Heritage, it was set up independently. And there's a couple now of very, very warm letters from the president of the Pontifical Commission, just praising the work of the museum and of what, not to him, to the president. And the president is the former superior of Moulin. It's always the superior of the monastery of Moulin who is the president, not Monsieur Picot. Monsieur Picot is the administrator. So again, there's no question of it going out of the order. And so Monique Marie at the moment has always been president, and probably it will be passed over to probably Anne-Sophie as she gets older. So he then became the founding director, and this is now a five-story building. This is the staircase inside. Lovely old 17th century staircase. Very rickety, as we know.
Yes.
And these are the new rooms. Now, this is the new room, the stronghold room of the liturgical silverware. Now, he is passionate about silverware. Because that was part of his, isn't he? Part of his background and part of his professional career. As there wasn't a lot of time to prepare for this because of all the fuses and all the things that went on, I didn't really get in touch with him or Jean as regards the choice of objects, as I'm going to show. I did this, this is my own choice, and I did it because of the link that there would be between what I'm showing and the visitation, either the sisters or the community, something that was more personal to us, where I think he probably would have loved me to show all his beautiful silverware. You can see it there. You can see it in the five books which he so kindly sent on, a great price. The five books are there. And I have to say, these pictures don't do justice, obviously, to the reality. They're clearer in the books. I apologize that they're not all very clear. And the embroidery, of course, just has to be seen, visually, because it's just so splendid. So that's the strong room. This and the next one are the vestment rooms, in which, and that's not all. He actually has, in the monastery, he has a whole apartment of extra coats and all liturgical things, because he changes around all the time, and he's got so much that it depends on what the theme is, as you know from the 5 years. So those are some of the embroidery rooms. Now, one of the greatest achievements, really, of this museum is the database. And the database is called Philothea. And I've done out just briefly some of the statistics. But this, first of all, this contained at the beginning only a few description of the collections in the museum, biographical notes on the people linked, like authors or former owners or the artists or the sisters. But every year more and more has been added to it. And now, 20 years later, there's a description of 8,500 objects placed on loan from nearly 90 monasteries. There are also 400 objects that are still in place in the monasteries but have been loaned or taken back or maybe form part of the exhibition, the temporary exhibition that goes on every year. There are biographical notices on 15,000 people, 2,000 or so linked with the museum, and there are also 12,700 visitandines. Now, this is where he would be grateful, especially Jean Charles, who is who is his right-hand man, you'll see him later, much younger man, who actually is the one who did the database. He's always asking for information about the sisters, about your, the list of your superiors, the list of professions. Anything he hasn't got, he would always be grateful for. He speaks very, very good English, and he writes English, so there's no problem in sending anything to him. There's also historical information on the 356 communities that have been founded since 1610, with much historical data and places where he's even Google Earthed them. So he's just amazing. The list of all the superiors represents 6,000 superiors and nearly 21,000 elections. So he's pretty, and this is all under wraps. You don't get access to any of this. If you want anything, he will always give you the information. But it is under wraps. It's not something that will be published for everybody, I think, at the moment. And the important thing is that all this can be linked one to the other. So if you want to know about, for example, Françoise Bernadette Lara, the superior who initiated this, you link on her name, it will give you Orléans, where she was professed, it will give you the foundation of Orléans, it will give you her dates of profession, her death. It's all interlinked. These are the five books which of the temporary exhibition, which is always the summer months and began 5 years ago. Splendors Unveiled. This is the canonization, beatification of our founders. This is all the embroidery, the visitation. I must say, this is the most splendid of them. And this drew a lot of laity and a lot of people not necessarily interested in the visitation, including Christiane Delacroix, if you know, one of the great couturiers of Paris, who was just amazed at the work of the of some of the embroidery. This was at the heart of the visitation. This was 2010, and so this was all to do with visitation. And this is this year's, from shade to light. And this really contains the talks that were given last year in Moulin when they had the international symposium on the visitation, and it was international people came from all over to speak about various subjects. And so that is what this book is mainly about. But the actual exhibition is about the royalties' gifts to the visitation. And that is why in the pictures, which I think I might have one or two, it is extremely sumptuous. It looks like the Palace of Versailles. You know, you've got the chandeliers, the lights anyway, chandeliers with glass walls, which gives that sense of expansion. It really is quite beautifully and, as we know, professionally done each year. He does call on a lot of professional people. Oh, this is the darkness, and this is goes to light, and you can see the reflection. It's not a very clear picture, but it's beautiful. That's a dalmatic given by some princess of Savoy, or somebody. Oh. Now, if I can find out the parallel. I got back. Oh, here he is. Right, this is Monsieur Pico. There's Monsieur Pico. I think that. Monsignor Pascal, the bishop, who is extremely favourable, very, very supportive, and the most delightful man. This is Monique, Mère Monique. I'll get her quiet, but she's in the middle. That's Mère Monique, who is the president of the association of called Glimpses of the Visitation. And next to her is the present superior. Seems to want to go on. This That is because that Jean Fossillon, Jean Charles in the light suit, very much younger man, home husband, four children. So he works at home, doing all the still for the works full time, I think, for the museum now. This is the reason I'm here. Zaylee was born last year with a very bad heart condition. Day after birth, she was 12 hours operated on. She is just a feisty little girl, and she's just so beautiful. And she's going to be operated again unexpectedly this month, which is why he wrote to me and said, please, can you do this for me? So that's Zaylee. So I think he'd appreciate your prayers. Get her through this operation. She's a cute little thing. Now we begin some of the artifacts. This is a bust of our Holy Founder, which comes from our Monastery of Marseille. And in the annals of 1662, which means it was from, you know, between the beatification and canonization, it was made for that, and one of our sisters, who was an expert gilder, painted and gilded it so perfectly that it became known to be, by experts, that they had never seen anything resemble him so perfectly. Oh. Now, some people think he's ugly. I think he's absolutely fantastic. One of the first things that was given to the museum, I don't know how anyone could part with it, honestly. I mean, the continuation from those days when, and the story is, which is so lovely, it has a little angels that you can see underneath to show that he was in heaven. The story is that the revolution, when everything was confiscated, after the revolution, about 1806, a sister was passing by an antique shop in Marseille and saw this bust. And she heard him saying, come and take me out. So she went back to her sisters, and the sisters at that time were living in their families, dispersed in the city. And so they all gathered and they bought this. So it was renovated by them. And a year later, they re-established the Monastery of Marseille and went in procession with this bust to the monastery. Now, Marseille, we know, closed only very recently, fused with Voiron, and that's how Voiron gave it to... Do you remember it, Anne-Cath?
Yeah.
Gave it to the museum. So I think it's just lovely. I love the connection. Come and take me out with you. Who wouldn't? Anyway, so that's... Now this one is in honour, and I'm afraid the bottom has been cut off. This is an ex voto of healing, a very, very early picture, but it's in honour of Mother Anne Madeleine Godefroy and Sister Mary Elizabeth Godefroy, because this may be one of their ancestors. She is Jeanne Godefroy.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was from Orléans, and... She had been paralyzed, she had other bodily ailments, she was lame, she was crippled. And for 13 years, she was like this. And she made a novena to our Holy Founder. And on the last day of the novena, she was miraculously cured. Now, in Orléans, there was an enormous devotion to Holy Founder in the early years. And this dates from 1629. After his death, there was a great devotion to him in Orléans. And people used to flock to the Church of the Visitation where his image was and where his relics were to pray. And this is to say, at her healing, she did this ex voto and she gave it to the Church of the Visitation, who during the Revolution managed to hide it and produced it at the re-establishment of Orléans, and then eventually deposed. It was deposed in... museum. Devotion to him was very popular because because of the introduction he gave out live, because he was great friends with the Bishop of Orléans. If you remember from this morning's wonderful talk with Claude Agnes Jolie La Roche, who founded Orléans, she herself had great devotion to her Holy Founder, didn't she? More than Holy Mother. And wherever she went, she used to write back to Holy Mother and say, I'm having these fragrances of Holy Founder. I don't know what Holy Mother made of it, but anyway. Wherever she went, she wrote this back, she kept writing this back and saying, his presence is here. Her mother said, yeah, okay, dear, you know. And the same when she went to Rennes, actually. So, you know, Orléans obviously was a special place for his presence. This is an interesting, very tall, it's about 90 inches by 60. It was made again for the beatification, and as you can see, it's an emblematic picture based on Gambard's Vie Symbolique. Mm. At the top there you have the shining star with the words, the morning star in the midst of clouds, referring to his role as spiritual director. The candlestick and the flame in the centre, with the words flame ardent and shining, and the globe with Vive Jésus, alluding to the visitation which had been expanding all over the world, or beginning to expand over the world, and the chalice and host depicting his ministry. And under the candlestick is a flame, is a candle leaning over on itself with the words, inclining, I regain my strength. And then all the hearts resembling his posterity, his spiritual posterity. Then there's the dove and the serpent with his gentleness and prudence. And this was put up for the canonization in Poitiers. And you had many, many pictures like this at the time of the canonization, which our sisters did for the feast. They either decorated the monastery or decorated the church with embroidered pictures or with pictures painted on cardboard and mounted and decorated the church. And Gambard has been an enormous influence, I think, on visitation art through the centuries. It was, as you know, quite a popular way of representing the spirit of a person. And I think in about 5 years ago there was that wonderful conference, wasn't it? Salesian conference on emblems, marvelous thing. This just shows an anonymous 17th century Christian emblems with the same candlestick that is in Holy Founder as well. And then the monasteries themselves. This is a big picture that's been painted from Emblem of the 51st on the fruitfulness of the Institute, firework that explodes into stars and showing the fruitfulness of our Institute. There's the, this is a picture of the eagle flying up to the sun, and this is the embroidered, which isn't terribly clear, but this is an embroidered. Now there are several others, and I think in the Salesian conference there were many others were described. All of them depicting his various mottos and headings, and of course there's that marvellous book that Elizabeth finished before she died, which we all know, simplifying Gambard's way of giving. You know, he gave it to the sisters in the second of Paris, and each day there's for each week 52 emblems, each week of the year, and seven practices, spiritual practices for each day of the week. And it's beautiful. I did a retreat once on it, privately, on them. And they're really wonderful. But Elizabeth has simplified it very much. But if you can do the French, it's Gambard himself is wonderful. And just to show that it wasn't just in the 17th century, this is our entrance to our Outsisters Chapel. And you can see the stained glass window in the background of four emblems. There's the sword crossed when he fell off the horse, and, you know, there's the phoenix rising from the ashes, the sunflower turning towards God, and this beautiful swan in the midst of the world but never sullied. So we have that just outside. So, you know, it goes on to the 21st century, this influence of the emblem manifestation of his virtues. This I love. It's a holy picture, as you can see, of Holy Mother. Why it's never been more disseminated in the Visitation, I just don't know. It's whether people in the past have thought it wasn't authentic enough. But it came from St. Marcellin. It's about 3 foot square, and the museum gave it as dating 1640, which is a year before she died. And I did some research on it, and I told Jean Charles that I really thought it was much earlier, because A, she doesn't really look 68 or 70, does she? I don't think so, anyway. It's not a particularly flattering one, but on the back of it was it's some very old writing that says, "This portrait is an original of our venerable mother Jane Frances Frémyot de Chantal, which Madame Baronne d'Uriage had made in Annecy. She was one of the dearest spiritual daughters of our Holy Founder and had a great affection for the first monastery of Grenoble," which we saw this morning. "Because of the precious bond of friendship with our Holy Mother, she allowed her to have a portrait painted, something she had refused to many others." And we know that because there's so few pictures really of her. Now, Madame d'Uriage was a very rich widow, childless, so she gave a lot of her fortune to charitable works, and particularly to the Visitation and to our monastery of Grenoble. Our Holy Mother mentions her several times in letters in the mid to early 1620s, and she speaks about the consolation of seeing her and staying with her on her return from Chambéry, which she actually stayed at her castle. But in 1635, Madame d'Uriage began making great complaints about our Holy Mother. Now, we don't know why, we don't know what it was about. And she even wrote to Madame de Montmorency about her, which obviously didn't influence Madame de Montmorency, but we don't know what really happened, and of course, our Holy Mother doesn't say anything, she's too charitable. So I think she was unlikely to have a portrait painted with that. So I've given it an earlier date, but it's never been, it was given by our, you know, the Sacred Heart Sisters took over Grenoble after the revolution, and they found it in the monastery. So they offered it to our sisters in St. Marcellin, who kept it, well, until Vif. I mean, it went to, I think St. Marcellin became Vif, and Vif, as we know, closed just some years ago, about 10 years ago or so. So it's always been in the, you know, it's always been in Visitation hands, and the writing is still there. It's very old, so I think it's pretty authentic. I quite like it. Mm. You know, I think it's a shame that we don't know more about it, really. This is our Holy Mother's cross. And this is really a lovely relic to have. It's before 1627. It's made of copper, because our crosses were of copper in the early days, not of silver. It's very worn. You can hardly see the design. That's why it's down the bottom there. The left-hand one is the one before the custom book defines it as the right-hand sided one. And until the closure of Orléans, which went to Caen, it was used to protect mothers from difficult confinements. It was always kept in the portress's room in Orléans, and it was lent to pregnant women.
For heavens.
And When our Holy Mother arrived in Orléans in 1627, she was there for 3 months. She was there a few times. I think about three or four times she passed through. In 1627, she was there, and she stayed 3 months plus, which means that she was there for San Sylvester. You know, December the 31st, when we changed crosses. So her cross would have been changed. And of course, knowing because of Holy Mother, they would have kept it. So I think that's pretty authentic too. And as it was given out to any women who were in had difficult pregnancies. And this reputation of her presiding over a happy confinement comes from the prayer she offered for Madame de Toulonjon, Gabrielle, when she was, not Gabrielle, Madame Françoise, when she was expecting Gabrielle. Remember, she'd had a few miscarriages and, you know, and then when she was expecting Gabrielle, our Holy Mother passed through and prayed over her and said to her, this baby will come to term. And Gabrielle was born. So that's where that tradition lies. And I think, you know, it's lovely. It must have helped many women, you know, have a safe confinement. This is Holy Mother's embroidery. Very simple, very much of the time. It was part of a covering for a pulpit. You know, they had the frontals, so many frontals always in those days. Centre motif is similar to our cross, you know, the whole of the coat of arms, of course. And all around the flowers, the very different ones, tulips, fritillaries, nigella, strawberry flowers. And accordingly, actually is at the moment in the, I think it's in Madrid, I think it might be in the museum, but anyway, it's from Madrid, first of Madrid. When the founding sisters went in 1749, they took this with them. And it's been, you know, it's been part of the monastery's heritage ever since. It was examined by professionals who declared it authentic and that it was embroidery of the first half of the 17th century. And you'll notice if you look through the books, many of the vestments that were made in the 17th century, they didn't go in for the elaborate things that later centuries did. They did all little flowers. It was always flowery. Whereas later we had more motifs. You know, we'd have the Sacred Heart or the, as you'll see later, the Basilica of Lourdes and things like that. So that's pretty authentic. And we know she did do embroideries. This is called Discernment in the Novitiate. Yeah, it's a beautiful. It's really quite beautiful.
This one's
it comes from Macon,
going out.
Dated about 1740. Is Jesus offering two ways? Take note, any novices and postulants that we've got with us. As you can see, you've got the way of the world, and you've got the way on the left to the cross. And you look at crosses and hard pebbles that line the road to the left. And to the right, it's all sweet flowers. You've got the devil. She's dressed in fine linen. And the words are, the young woman, she's even barefooted. You can see it there, some of it's cut off. All these troubles, you know, the words of Jesus to her, first of all, are, she who follows me in pain and suffering will have through me heaven as a reward. And her words are, all these troubles, my God, are very sweet to our soul, which loves you and has you for spouse. So it was to remind the novices of the choice they had made. And if you notice, if you can see, it isn't terribly clear, the original, Jesus had his left hand on the cross. Can you see just along the bar, that sort of a very faint handprint? And they've altered the painting to give the hand towards the young girl saying, come. But if you can see it better in a book, his hand imprint is actually on the cross. This was, as I say, this was in came from Mâcon and was always in the novitiate there. And Mâcon now is part of Moulin, part of the monastery of Moulin, fused with it. This is a lovely picture called Visitandines at Work Under Heavenly Protection. An oil painting. It's classed as a historical monument. Unfortunately, it's not in our possession. It belongs to, or it found itself in a church just north of Rouen, Freneuse. So it's called the Freneuse painting. But it shows shows the heavenly protection, of course, Joseph, Jesus, and Our Lady, and professors, novices, and these young women. And they're all embroidering, and they're all sewing. And the words on the scroll spoken by Our Lady, she says, "My daughters, your lovely works carry the images of virtues, innocent virtues which charm the eyes of Jesus." Now, if you get a magnifying glass and you pour over it for hours, you find that in each of those scrolls, don't even know you can see the scroll properly, where the sisters are working, there's a little scroll coming out of words. And it's all the little virtues. Silence, modesty, simplicity, humility, gentleness, obedience, peace of heart, sincerity. Each one has got a little virtue that they're working at. And they're sitting very rightly. One of my observations is, where's Holy Mother?
Yeah.
So, and another query for me is, why is St. Joseph top of the picture? Why is St. Joseph? We've got Augustine, we've got Holy Founder, Our Lady below. And I'd just like to have a theory that this may well have belonged to the first monastery of Annecy, which was dedicated to St. Joseph, you remember?
Yeah.
Or the monastery itself, maybe inside the monastery, it might have been done as a gift. The only person who has a basket is the very end one, and I kind of think that might be Holy Mother. I'd just like to think the Holy Mother's on it somewhere. So maybe she's just the first one there working. But St. Joseph has always puzzled me, is why St. Joseph should be such a prominent patron there of it. But it's a lovely, very big picture, and I say it's a historical monument now, so we'll never have it back in our possession. This will delight Sister Mary Paula, who's always interested in the little habit. It's an ex voto from our first monastery of Paris, St. Antoine. And the mistress, it's a thanksgiving of the healing of Sister Charlotte Josephine de Rakowski, who was a daughter of Prince Joseph, who owned the Transylvanian countries. She was orphaned pretty young, and she was placed as a boarder in the first monastery of Annecy. So she had royal guardianship. But Monsieur le Dauphin, the father of Louis XVI, heard of her being there and transferred her to the monastery of Paris for some reason. I think he was taking over the guardianship. So she was in the monastery of Paris as a child, as a boarder. And then I don't know if you remember Princess Carignan, but she arranged a marriage. They wanted to arrange the marriage of the House of Bourbon and Savoy. So they tried to arrange her to be the link and to the marriage. Anyway, when they did, she declared her vocation. And so she entered immediately, about 17 years of age, to the community of Paris. And she was very, very much loved. She won the friendship of everyone. And she was placed as first mistress in the boarding school. Now, when she was 29, she got smallpox, which, as we know, in those days still is, but it's very, very debilitating. And she had these terrible rashes in her mouth, her face was disfigured, and scars all over her body. And the whole community and the little habit prayed for her healing. So you can see her in bed in her four poster, and the sisters of the little habit in front here. and then the community here all pray to Our Lady, to whom she had a great devotion. This is another one. So there was two ex-votos. So she was pretty. She didn't live that much after us. She only lived about 15 years after that. The interesting thing with the little sister with the little habit, the sister Mary Paula loves to remark, is you see there was a square gimp-like effect in their habits. Uh-huh. And here you had the round colours. Uh-huh. One theory is that they were a different stage, don't you say, a different stage of being a little sister with a little habit.
Sure, yeah.
So whether these were the ones by now who do look a little bit older, who actually were more serious about their vocation, maybe. Anyway, thank God she got over the illness. Uh-huh. And these two ex-voters have been preserved in Paris ever since 1765, when she fell ill. Now, this isn't clear, I'm afraid, but you can get the gist of what it is. The community, obviously, made in the form of a genealogical tree, of the community of Rennes, Mother Jolie de la Roche's community. But this is 18th century, we know, because the top you've got the relics of Holy Founder, Holy Mother, and again, if you get these spy glasses, you can see it's saint, both of them are saints, both got halos, so it's after the canonization of Holy Mother. And in the scroll, the words are the words that come from. Do you remember in Bourbilly, she had the vision before she met Holy Founder. She had the vision that she, a large group of young girls and widows who came towards her and gathered round her, and she heard the words, "My servant and you will have this generation." So that's her and Holy Founder. And then, "These are a chosen group, and I wish them to be saints." So that's what's in the scroll. And then somebody has painted the whole of the community, Superior there at the top, and the whole of the community down to the lay sisters and the apostles and novices. And they think it was given, as it was always kept in the Superior's cabinet, and in the reliquary, inventory of the relics, they said this must be kept in the Superior's cabinet. So they think it probably was given for a Superior's feast or something, probably in along those lines. You've got 34 professed, 2 novices, 7 lay sisters. And it's a lovely little memento, but it is of the 18th century, either late 18th century or 19th century. Another one that seems to do our family history is this fantastic family tree, not in the museum, I hasten to add, because it's attached to the wall. It's a painting on the wall in Solers, our Swiss monastery. It's a charming painting in the cloister leading to the cemetery. And although it's very difficult to actually make out the names, the first ones come from, you can make out a few surnames, but you can't really do much. The first ones date from 1650. It was founded in 1645, but they went to the present monastery in 1679. So I imagine it was painted pretty soon after they arrived. And then each sister has been included in it. There are 25 blank spaces. I don't think there's 25 sisters left yet now. But it's a beautiful, Solers is a beautiful monastery, and I mean, it's original, it's like Fribourg. The two Swiss monasteries are there since they were 371 years, I don't know, 375 years, I think, Fribourg has been in that monastery. So there's lots of original, features in it. This was done in honour of our procession. Had to put a procession in. It's just an oil painting, nothing particularly about it. But I think it was about the beginning of the 19th century. they date it to the 19th century. It's possible, having done some research, that it might have been made for the commemoration of the re-establishment of Nice, which was established on the 14th of September, 1819 or so. And that's the exaltation of the Holy Cross. And I don't know if you do still, but many of us, we used to have a procession of the exaltation of the Holy Cross, didn't we? Procession round the monastery with the relic of the Holy Cross, which was in the custom book. So I think this is probably commemorating the re-establishment of Nice, which unfortunately is now closed too. This is a frontal, altar frontal, from Vif, which closed not long ago, and has been used up until about 20 years ago, was still being used in front of the chapter room altar on great feast days. It shows Our Lady seated in the center, holding the child Jesus, Holy Founder kneeling on a cushion, and offering to Our Lady the hearts of all visitandines, who takes them and gives them to Jesus. And the Holy Spirit sheds rays of light on them, and the angel holds a scroll with the words, "Receive the hearts of your daughters." The whole scene is framed in flowers held by two large angels, which hold our coat of arms. As one of the angels, and you can see our coat of arms. The hands and the faces, the arms and the faces were painted and then attached to the linen, but otherwise the rest is all embroidery. And I say it was used until quite frequently. This is a canon. This is the chasuble for canonization of Holy Founder from Paray-le-Monial. Oh, Holy Mother, I think. No, it's Holy Mother, this one. This is the Arden. This is the altar with the flames of love. Because in her, actually it was embroidered also by one of the sisters of Paray, Marie-Thérèse de Sicot, for the celebrations of Holy Mother's canonization at Paray in 1768. That was a year later than the actual canonization. Because at her beatification in Rome, there was a sermon that said, "Where the fire of divine love never ceased to burn, and that in her heart that love had the qualities of a fire in its centre, pure, efficacious, and tranquil." And so they took these words, and the sister embroidered this as the image for her motif, her centrepiece motif for the canonization of Holy Mother. And again, the embroidery you have to actually see, or at least see in the books. This is a beautiful monstrance, again classed, it's a historical monument now in France, for the canonization of St. Margaret Mary. There was a lot of elaborate stuff made at the time of her canonization, especially by the monasteries who were pretty wealthy. At the base, there's an enamel medallion representing the coat of arms and the heraldic shield. And there are three other identical ones with marguerites. And the jewels are ruby, diamond, pearl, opal, and emerald. It really is quite precious. Around the window, you have the four medallions, the Sacred Heart, Holy Founder, Holy Mother, and St. Margaret Mary. And underneath is the inscription, it's a souvenir of the canonization. Perhaps it's the next one. You can see how beautiful that is. It's enamel, of course. They did some very beautiful things at that time. Now this, I'm afraid, is a little light, but this is one of the most amazing sets of liturgical vestments probably that I think that we have made. There's everything, chasuble, dalmatic, cope, stole, chalice, everything. This is the chasuble, and it was done by, a little bit better, by Marie Pia de Fosse of Nantes. and only done in the turn of last century, you know, about 1900s. She turned out an enormous amount of embroidery works. Some of it exquisitely embroidered, all with short stitch embroidery. This is quite nationalistic, I might add, because it's, although it's to do with Sacred Heart, it includes Clovis's baptism and the Chasuble, the town of Nantes, and the wars of France. You've got St. Michael at the top defeating the dragon in front of Sacré-Cœur in Montmartre. Feast of the Sacred Heart celebrated in Paris, first one, you know, the altar and the novices. You've got her being crowned by the Sacred Heart at her beatification. You've got the guardian angel of Nantes, and then you've got the different wars and the different bishops of Nantes. So it was pretty local from the point of view of representing the place. Am I still over the time?
No, do you want?
I haven't got much left. No, that's okay. That's your opinion. Yeah. Thanks. On the reverse of the cope, that's a painting that Marie Pia actually did before she embroidered it onto the back of the chasuble. But her embroideries are really quite something, actually. She's had a very delicate constitution, so of course she spent all her life doing this. This is another one of hers, which I think is charming. I love this one. Because look at the detail in it, for those who know the choir in Paris Limonial, where she had that vision when she held the baby. Jesus, child Jesus, in her arms at Matins.
Jesus.
Yeah. Another one of hers, which isn't very clear, but I put it in just to show how she commemorated the current events. This is another one again of various dignitaries, church dignitaries. The amount of short stitch embroidery in this, for those who are embroiderers, is really quite amazing. This is a chasuble she did for Lourdes, 1858. 16th anniversary, 1918. Because it also commemorated the end of the war. It was the grotto of Lourdes, and right at the, I think in the front, which I don't think we see, there's the date, 11th of November 1918, Armistice Day. And that's all down the front. This is a close-up detail of the basilica in Lourdes. She must have had really quite a wonderful imagination. This is just different. This isn't by her. This is from Germany. I'm trying to include a bit from, not, it's not just all France. This is by a sister from Munster who was exiled to Orléans during the times of the Prussian Wars. And it's all silk and gold thread with passion flowers. And the theme of the passion, they think, she took because of the exile they were going through. This is a close-up. I think it's really very beautiful. Again, all short stitch embroidery, all silks, golden silks. This isn't very clearly seen, but it's a precious artifact in this, it's quite a big picture in ivory and enamel, enhanced by curled wreaths and flowers in silver and bronze around the edges. It was given, it's called the Lament of the Angels, and it was quite a popular theme in the 17th century, or it wasn't, 16th century even, actually. This is 1590, this picture dates from. It is a picture, but it's a sculpture, really. It's an ivory sculpture. They did quite a lot of this particular Lament of the Angels, as it's called. But the interesting story is it was given to Commander de Sillery by Pope Pius V when he went to Rome as ambassador to the king. And as you know, he was a great devotee of Holy Founder. And he went to Annecy from Paris and made this offering to the monastery of Annecy and left it with them. How it's come to be in the museum, we think, is that the last superior of Annecy at the time of the revolution went to Chambéry, Mother Mary Amédée de Noyer. She went to the Monastery of Chambéry, and Chambéry have had it in their possession from their re-establishment. So we presume it's from there. But that's one of the oldest I think there is in 1590. And with that lovely history of continuity of Commander de Sillery, who did so much for the visitation in the beginning days, both as benefactor and as great support to the Paris monasteries. This I put because it's a statue, again very old, actually this is older, it's 1480 to 90, a Pieta that came from Vif and was always in the chapter room in Rief. Now, at the revolution, many things again were confiscated, and the sisters held on to what they could. And when they were reunited, they brought all their little possessions that they'd all taken into their families together and re-established the community. But they had to sell off many of their treasures because they were so poor that they had nothing to eat, nothing to sleep on. They were just so, so poor in Vif. It wasn't Vif, I think it was probably Romont at the time, or Saint-Marcellin. This they could never part with. They said they would never, ever part with the Pieta because it had been part of their community history since they founded in 1645, so it was really something very special to them. And the last superior, Mother Mary Jacqueline, is now in Marclar. Anyone who went to Marclar would have seen her. She stayed in the traditional habit, and she was the one who brought it to and deposited it in Moulins. Two more. This is the last one. We all know those who've been. This is a painting by Saint Thérèse of Lisieux. Oh. The Dream of the Infant Jesus. We know the connections between Le Mans and their aunt, and the fact that Pauline and Mary went to school there, of course, and everything. Anyway, this was offered by Mother Agnes de Jesus, Pauline, to the Visitation of Le Mans. Just after she was elected prioress, Thérèse had painted it for her on the first anniversary of her election. And it symbolizes, of course, the Holy Face, the Child Jesus of the Holy Face. It was Thérèse's own picture of herself. In actual fact, when you look at the Jesus, I think it looks so much like Thérèse. Self-portrait. She did lots of things like this, Thérèse. I mean, when she was. Do you remember she never got the chance to paint and learn like Céline did, and so when she entered, Pauline gave her opportunities to learn, and so she did quite a lot of painting on silk and especially for the sacristy. So this was in Le Mans, and when Le Mans closed, it was put into a frame at Thérèse's canonization. And then when Le Mans closed, they offered it to the museum, where it was in one of the last temporary exhibitions, actually, and looking very splendid. And this is the last, not least, but it's the last, and I think it's so beautiful. It is a very old, quite small, enamel painting of a copy by a printer in the 1650s, 60s. It's a little bit. The donator was baptized in our Monastery of Le Mans, and as a gift, she gave this to the community. And over the cross, you can see a heart inflamed, one of Helivander's symbols of him, ardent love. The cross, which is what I absolutely love, comes down and protects the Visitation.
Oh.
You see, there's the monastery, Visitation underneath.
Oh, yeah.
The cross is over, and it's protecting the Visitation. I think it's delightful.
Lovely.
Another one of my little theories is, you see the crown on top?
Yes.
I think that's us. Do you remember the two
my
wishes?
My joy and my crown. So
twice in the second wish, you are my crown, you are my joy and my crown. And in the third wish again, my crown. We are his crown. He's regarded as always as his joy and his crown. And you know, it's a long time ago, but I like to think that that we're his crown and his joy, and that we will always continue to be. So there we are.
For more information about the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary, go to visitationspirit.org.